I'm Brian.
And I'm Maddie. We are your hosts for this Cohere Technologies Deep Dive podcast.
So, imagine for a second that you are just looking down at your smartphone. The screen is dark, but right in the center, you see these glowing blue letters saying, you know, 6G.
Right? Just your standard network connection?
Exactly. But if you look a little closer at the glass, you can see a reflection over those letters. It's the dark kind of geometric silhouette of a telecommunications tower stretching up into the sky.
Which looks completely ordinary to most people.
Yeah, totally ordinary. A standard cellular tower just giving you your internet, your streaming video, your social media. But what if that very same tower could also use the current signals that are beaming all around to create a silent sensor? A sensor that could protect against threats to national security and public safety, and also provide the foundation for new consumer services.
Oh, it's a wild thought.
Right. Like, what if at this exact moment that everyday piece of cellular infrastructure was not only providing the voice and data services you use today, but was also mapping the physical environment, even tracking a fast-moving drone swarm right above your head?
It is a staggering visual. And, you know, according to a stack of internal briefing notes and a newly awarded $30 million Silicon Valley contract, it's not science fiction anymore.
Yeah, that's the craziest part.
We are looking at a fundamental convergence of national defense, public safety, and everyday telecommunications, and it's being driven by the U.S. government and a company called Cohere Technologies.
Okay.
Let's unpack this. Or, actually, let's just jump right in because the source material we have today paints a picture of a world that's changing quickly right before our eyes.
It really is.
For everyone joining us on this deep dive, we are pulling from tech journalism articles published in Mobile World Live and the Mobile Network, specifically dated July 2, 2026. We've also got official press releases and a very revealing public LinkedIn post from a government director.
And you know what's fascinating here is that this isn't just some defense startup doing their own thing.
No, not at all. The money is coming directly from the Future G office within the U.S. government.
And their immediate objective with this Cohere Technologies contract is to build a working prototype for something called ISAC. That stands for Integrated Sensing and Communications.
But before we get into the software solution from Cohere that makes ISAC possible, I feel like we need to look at why the Department of War is seeking a new way to scan the skies.
Right. Why change now?
Yeah. They already have the most advanced military radars on the planet. Why on earth do they need a new solution that leverages cell towers?
Well, the world is changing quickly. Just think about the role that drones have played in the war in Ukraine, and even more recently in Iran. And consider how many drones have been detected around recent World Cup games in our country this summer, creating a potential threat to our public venues, not only at our national borders, but deep within our homeland. It comes down to basic physics and, honestly, harsh economics. The briefing notes we have lay out the realities of traditional radar systems.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's just the cost. Building a modern, high-powered radar facility requires getting the land, pouring the concrete, installing those massive phased arrays, and powering the site. It costs an absolute fortune.
So you can't just throw them up everywhere.
Exactly, because they're so incredibly expensive, you typically deploy them in a few strategic locations. You simply cannot cover an entire continent with them.
Right? And even if you had, like, unlimited money to build a radar station on every single street corner, you still run into this second problem.
The blind spot.
Yeah? The documents highlight this as a structural blind spot. Traditional radar is really designed to look up and out, right?
Yeah, it's scanning for fighter jets and ballistic missiles high in the atmosphere.
But because of the curvature of the Earth. Yep. And, you know, all the physical clutter on the ground, like trees, buildings, hills, traditional radar provides virtually zero coverage under about 300 feet of local altitude.
And that 300-foot ceiling is the critical vulnerability.
It's a huge gap.
It is. Hostile actors know all about this blind spot. The internal documents specifically focus on the threat of fast-moving tactical drone swarms.
Which are terrifying in their own right.
Absolutely, because these aren't high-altitude bombers. Yeah, these are small, incredibly agile machines flying at insane speeds just above the tree line. They literally fly under the radar.
So if you're, say, a drone mitigation team stationed at a mission-critical oil refinery, and you're relying on traditional radar to warn you, you are completely blind.
Exactly.
A swarm could be a few miles away, just hugging the terrain, and your screens would be totally blank until the drones are physically dropping out of the sky, right on top of you. You'd have zero reaction time.
That is the terrifying gap in the armor right there. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it brings us to the core logic of ISAC. Okay, if the Department of War, or even Homeland Security, cannot afford to build thousands of new ground-level radar stations, they must look for structures that already exist at the ground level.
And what's everywhere? Yeah, cell towers.
Exactly. Across the United States, there are roughly 250,000 outdoor cellular sites.
Wow. You know, I was trying to visualize this earlier. Think of traditional radar, like a giant lighthouse on a cliff.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It is incredibly powerful. It can spot a massive ship many miles away across the ocean. But that lighthouse is completely blind to someone crawling through the tall grass right at the base of the tower.
Right. The beam literally goes right over their head.
Exactly. So what ISAC does is weave a highly sensitive tripwire into every single blade of grass in the field around the lighthouse.
That's a perfect way to put it.
The Department of War doesn't need to pour new concrete or build new towers. They are just hitching a ride on the telecom infrastructure that commercial companies have already spent billions putting in place.
It's such an elegant physical solution. You take something totally ubiquitous, the cell tower, and you give it a secondary, highly advanced capability.
But, and this is a big but, transforming a tower that is designed to just stream data into a tower that can physically track a fast-moving object requires a monumental leap in software engineering.
Right, okay.
Because the radio waves used for your smartphone were never meant to act as a sensing tripwire.
No, they definitely weren't, which immediately creates a massive technical hurdle.
Right. Like if an antenna is blasting out a Netflix stream to my phone, how can that exact same antenna simultaneously bounce a signal off a tactical drone to track its speed?
Without ruining your movie.
Exactly. How does the tower do both jobs at the exact same time without the signals completely mangling each other?
Well, this is precisely why Cohere Technologies secured the contract. They brought an innovative software technology called PulseZone to the table.
Okay.
And PulseZone is powered by a waveform known as ZAC-OTFS. That stands for ZAC Orthogonal Time Frequency Space.
Okay. ZAC Orthogonal Time Frequency Space. We really need to break that down mechanically because this seems to be the absolute core of how this entire system works.
It is. To understand the breakthrough, we need to look at how conventional cellular networks operate today. Right now, 4G and 5G networks use a standard called OFDM.
Right.
You can think of OFDM as encoding information on a very strict two-dimensional grid of time and frequency. It maps out exactly which frequency is carrying your data at any given microsecond.
So, if I'm sitting on a park bench, or even driving along a highway downloading an email, that two-dimensional grid works well. Yeah. Right? The grid just stays aligned.
Exactly, but the moment you try to use that time frequency grid as a sensor to track things moving at much higher speeds, the system struggles to keep up.
Why is that?
Well, think of OFDM like taking a photograph with a slow shutter speed. If the subject is sitting perfectly still, the picture is crisp. The parameters are set to keep the system balanced and allow data to get through without too much corruption. And these parameters can be adjusted a bit, just like a photographer adjusts shutter speed when taking pictures of objects in motion. If you set the shutter speed super slow, you get excellent resolution, but only when things are perfectly still. Increase the shutter speed, and you can take pictures of moving objects, but you lose resolution. And at some point, at even higher speeds, the entire image just becomes a blur. These are the challenges doing ISAC with OFDM. You can play with the parameters, but you're always compromising, and eventually it just doesn't scale.
Okay.
In radio physics, that blur is known as the Doppler effect. The fast movement literally affects the frequencies on the grid.
Oh, man. so conventional 5G sees a fast-moving drone, gets hit with the Doppler effect, and does what it can to read the data despite the Doppler.
Exactly. It senses to the best of its ability.
So how does ZAC-OTFS address the blurry photo?
By fundamentally changing the math. ZAC-OTFS does not use that standard time frequency grid. Instead, it encodes information natively in what is called the delay Doppler domain.
The delay Doppler domain.
Rather than taking a photograph and just hoping the drone doesn't blur the image, ZAC-OTFS works more like a highly advanced police radar gun that is specifically calibrated to measure the blur itself.
Wait, really? It uses the messiness as an advantage?
It literally turns the Doppler challenge into a design parameter. The delay of the signal bouncing back tells the system the exact distance of the object, and the Doppler shift, the way the wave compresses as the object moves, tells the system the exact speed and trajectory.
That is brilliant.
Because it operates natively in this delay Doppler domain, the high speed of the drone doesn't scramble the signal at all. The speed becomes part of the solution since it is actually part of the native language the waveform speaks.
Which aligns perfectly with that quote from Tom Rondo, the principal director for Future-G. Yes, he noted in his public post that this direct delay Doppler encoding gives massive communications and sensing performance advantages in high Doppler environments.
Right.
So Rondo is essentially saying that the faster and more aggressively a tactical drone maneuvers, its signature maintains same level of clarity to the ZAC-OTFS system.
Exactly. And Cohere's software doesn't just collect those raw bounce-back signals and use them to track drones and make cellular connections better.
Okay. What else does Cohere do with this data?
Cohere feeds this raw sensing data directly into a layered AI inferencing system to drive sensing at scale in the most challenging possible environment, which is the environment that our warfighters face every day.
What's a layered AI inferencing system?
It's an intelligence layer that instantly translates the physics of the track. But it's more than just plotting a dot on a map. The system actually classifies the data and generates a confidence score.
So the local cell tower isn't just saying, hey, an object is moving over there. No, the system is definitively stating there is an object at these exact 3D coordinates moving at a specific speed on this specific vector. And based on the radio signature, I am 98% confident it is a drone, not like a flock of geese.
So while our team can light up the local airspace, generate 3D tracking data on every moving object around them, and the enemy simply sees the normal ambient of a city's cellular network.
Wow.
The operational footprint is functionally invisible.
That is wild. They've essentially figured out how to turn the world's most ubiquitous technology into a protective grid.
They really have.
But, you know, to make this work across hundreds of thousands of towers, the Department of War is doing something that seems entirely counterintuitive for a massive military bureaucracy.
They are looking beyond their own closed systems.
Right. This is perhaps the biggest strategic pivot in the contract that Cohere received.
It's a huge departure. Historically, military procurement has always been defined by proprietary hardware.
Yep, big black boxes.
Exactly. If the military needed a new radio, they paid a defense contractor to build a highly classified black box. It ran proprietary code that no one outside the contractor could touch, and it usually took 10 years to develop.
Sounds familiar.
But Future-G is pushing aggressively toward an open software-driven architecture. This has been happening for several years under a program that the industry calls Open RAN, but Future-G is taking that program to an entirely new level of openness. It's called OCUDU.
Wait, what's that?
So OCUDU stands for Open Centralized Unit Distributed Unit. Those are the basic building blocks of today's cellular networks, and they include all the equipment that sits near the towers we've been talking about today. And from what I'm gathering, this platform is ushering in an era where multiple entirely different wireless waveforms like 4G, 5G, and the future 6G can all seamlessly coexist on the exact same spectrum.
Okay.
And to understand why this is revolutionary, let's look at how cellular networks used to be built. Traditionally, a company like Nokia or Ericsson would sell a lockbox that sits under a tower to a telecom provider.
Right.
The brain inside that black box in the actual antenna were fundamentally fused together by proprietary code. You couldn't move the brain or install third-party software on it. OpenRAN began to address these limitations by creating published interfaces, and now Okudu is taking that to an entirely next level.
Exactly. What Okudu does is split the brain and the functions that run in software in those black boxes from the physical hardware. The initiative driving this isn't some secretive military lab. Okudu is actually a public-private initiative hosted by the Linux Foundation.
Wait, the open-source people?
Yes. They are building a production-ready open-source stack for telecommunications. It basically transforms the cell tower from a closed architecture into something much more like a modern smartphone with an app store. It means we have reached an era where networks become completely elastic. The hardware is basically just a blank canvas, and the waveforms are just apps you install.
So Cohere's multi-waveform physical layer, the software running both the legacy 5G traffic and the new ZAC OTFS waveform, is essentially just an incredibly advanced app that can be downloaded onto the tower's open-source brain.
That is exactly what it is. The hardware stays the same, but the capability becomes completely software-defined, and the pace of innovation gets much faster.
Right. One of our sources from Mobile World Live included an image of a 6G sign on a smartphone screen reflecting the images of telecommunication towers. And it perfectly captures what this Okudu breakthrough means for the future. By moving to this open software stack, you can have multiple entirely different waveforms operating at the exact same time. You can have the standard 5G OFDM and this brand new ZAC OTFS all existing simultaneously.
They access the same spectrum elastically based on what the network demands at that exact microsecond.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture of telecommunications, it means the end of the traditional rip and replace cycle. When new innovations arrive, network operators won't need to rebuild the physical tower or swap out the servers. They just push a software update to the Okudu platform over the internet, and boom, now the site has advanced capabilities alongside the existing solutions all running together on the same hardware.
And this is so deeply critical because it completely changes how we preserve older waveforms. Think about IoT devices, the Internet of Things. We are talking about smart meters on your house, industrial sensors monitoring pipelines, agricultural monitors, measuring soil moisture.
Right. The stuff we rely on every day.
Exactly. These devices run on older waveforms.
And they are engineered to have a service life that is far, far longer than your average smartphone. I mean, you might upgrade your phone every 2 years, but a smart grid sensor buried in concrete may need to function for decades.
That highlights a massive friction point in the old hardware-locked model. In the past, when a telecom company decided they needed to turn off a 2G or 3G network to make room in the spectrum for the new generation, all of those long-lasting IoT devices would instantly become electronic bricks. They would lose their connection completely, costing industries billions in replacement fees.
But by utilizing the breakthroughs enabled by the Okudu multi-waveform project, we won't have to choose anymore. We can preserve those older compatible waveforms with elastic capacity indefinitely for the IoT devices that rely on it. So we can support the smart meters while simultaneously rolling out new capabilities running solutions like a ZAC OTFS sensing layer.
That's incredible.
Now, the documents do stress that this open architecture is bound by stringent zero-trust security requirements. They have to ensure that bad actors can't just hack in and hijack the tower.
Naturally.
But the fundamental approach relies on open standards. And to prove that this software app model actually works out in the real world, the contract includes a mobile test platform.
Yeah, I saw that. The sources mentioned that this test platform is going to enable monostatic, bistatic, and multistatic sensing setups.
Right. They are continuously sharing data across the open source software stack, creating this incredibly dense interconnected web.
So if a drone flies through downtown, it isn't just being tracked by one tower. It's being continuously triangulated in 3D space by every single antenna it passes.
Wow.
And on the commercial side, sensing based on ZAC OTFS has a benefit that makes it more attractive than sensing based on today's OFDM.
What is that?
OFDM-based sensing has to steal communications capacity for sensing. And When a drone has more energy focused on it due to moving faster or requiring a higher resolution, the commercial customers suffer from congestion because these services contend for network capacity.
Ah, so in a busy urban network, the customers would feel the slowdown caused by sensing?
Yeah. But ZAC OTFS sensing cleverly uses reflected communications traffic and doesn't subtract from capacity to sense. There is zero overhead between the two services.
This means the customers who pay for the network won't experience any pain from the addition of sensing to the network?
Exactly.
It's a real game changer.
But, you know, I keep coming back to the cultural friction of this. This raises an important question for me.
What's that?
We're talking about the Department of War building a system to track hostile drone swarms, and they are intentionally building it on an open-source Linux Foundation ecosystem.
Why would the military want to share the sandbox with the commercial telecom sector when national security is on the line? That just seems so unlikely.
Not really. The ISAC vision of Future G leverages commercial evolution, as you can't wait a decade for a solution to the fast-evolving drone threats.
Exactly. In his post, Tom Rondo made a real point of saying that the Future G office must adopt an innovate-first posture.
They realize they have to move at the speed of software, not the speed of traditional government procurement.
They just cannot afford to spend 10 years building a proprietary military network from scratch. Relying on ready-to-deploy commercial infrastructure and scaling a trusted domestic technology base through open standards is just exponentially faster and cheaper.
That makes a lot of sense.
By embracing the OKUDU open architecture, the Department of War is effectively piggybacking on the massive multi-billion-dollar R&D budgets of the commercial telecom industry.
Let the civilian sector solve the hardware problems so the military can focus purely on the tactical software.
Exactly.
And the commercial sector actually gets something massive in return, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Because this technology isn't intended just for the battlefield. Cohere's CEO, Ray Dolan, calls this contract a milestone for dual-use wireless technology.
Yeah. Dual use meaning it was funded for defense, but its commercial applications are just as viable. And the commercial spillover identified in the briefing notes is honestly staggering.
What are they looking at?
They specifically call out advanced air mobility,
which is the industry term for, like, automated air taxis, drone delivery services, all of that.
Right? Think about it. If you are a city planner and you suddenly have thousands of Amazon delivery drones, automated air taxis, and emergency medical,
you need a way to manage that traffic.
Desperately.
Yeah.
But you cannot build thousands of spinning radar dishes on top of skyscrapers. People wouldn't stand for it, and it's too expensive.
But if every 5G and 6G antenna on every street corner is already equipped with ZAC OTFS, the city already has a seamlessly integrated real-time 3D sensing grid just sitting there.
Precisely. The exact same mathematical formula the Department of War uses to identify a hostile tactical drone can be used by civilian air traffic control to make sure a delivery drone doesn't crash into a medical helicopter.
That is just phenomenal.
The underlying physics, you know, the delay Doppler tracking, the 3D confidence scoring, the multi-static triangulation, it all translates perfectly to civilian life. The commercial telecom network is really the only logical infrastructure capable of handling the sheer volume of low-altitude air traffic we are going to see in the next decade.
So what does this all mean? Let's try to synthesize this journey for you, the listener, because the immediate takeaway from the sources we've unpacked today is profound.
Really is.
The everyday telecommunications infrastructure all around you, like the towers you drive past on your morning commute, the antennas bolted to the side of the local parking garage, they are undergoing a silent metamorphosis.
Right.
They're no longer just passive pipelines for your data. They're being rapidly reimagined into active real-time 3D sensing systems. Yep. They're becoming the foundational layer for securing national borders against unseen threats, and eventually, the digital air traffic controllers for the future.
We are truly witnessing a fundamental shift in how human beings interact with the physical world through the wireless spectrum.
Yeah.
For the last 30 years, we have used cellular networks to make calls, send messages, and exchange massive amounts of data over the air. Now, we are using those exact same waves to sense and model the physical world and to organize our environment in real time.
Cellular networks that can see, that perfectly captures the magnitude of this shift. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive journey.